Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Maiocco.
All right, coming up on the 49ers Insider Podcast a little bit later, we'll be talking to Bradley Pinion. He's the 49ers nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. So we'll catch up with him, talk a little bit about off-the-field stuff, some of the good stuff that he's been doing and the 49ers have been doing. But first, we check in with Jeff Garcia to talk a lot about the good stuff the 49ers are doing on the field. And Jeff, the thing that kind of caught me from this game on Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars is Kyle Shanahan really knows how to scheme, doesn't he?
He did a great job of play calling. You saw the movement, getting Jimmy outside, a lot of successful plays in giving him an opportunity to attack on the edge and the crossing routes. And then you saw them pull back up the sideline with a little play action boot that they stayed inside the pocket. He was able to get Jimmy Garoppolo to connect with Jusek down the left sideline and big time play. And, you know, it started right from the get-go, just with the play calling, the efficiency, and moving right down the field with that opening drive and getting a touchdown on the board, which was a great way, obviously, to start the game. First time all season long that they began a game with a touchdown scoring drive. And it just continued from there. I have to be really excited about the future of this team, the way things are going, especially being such a young team and a team that had gone through a lot of different phases, a lot of changes throughout the season with injury and different personnel stepping onto the field, but really solidifying the quarterback position with that trade in New England. And this young man is really proving that he's something special out there.
And that's one of the things that, you know, when you look at Kyle Shanahan, who was supposed to be, you know, well, he is one of the top offensive coordinators in the league during his time at several different stops. Once he gets maybe a better feel for his own personnel and they get some of the guys in there that he wants to have in there and that fit his scheme, and with this quarterback, I mean, that's a reason for a lot more optimism too, just looking forward to, you know, him really sinking his teeth in and constructing game plans to face the upcoming defense. And I mean, that was never more apparent than when they faced the top defense in the league.
Absolutely. Especially the top defense against the pass. And then you have a quarterback go out there and complete 70% of his balls and two touchdown passes. Could have easily have been a third had not pressure gotten to him a little bit soon and force the turnover down in the red zone. But outside of that, I mean, just the opportunities to create and find receivers, find open receivers, find openings in the defense, attack in the middle of the defense. I mean, you looked at Jacksonville with that top-rated pass defense. It was not only just the secondary, but a great rush that they were able to stabilize, only one sack in the hurry that caused the interception. But, you know, outside of that, the offensive line did a pretty good job of allowing Jimmy to have time to throw, to look down the field. And then at times when there was pressure, he was able to elude and escape and extend the play and make plays outside the pocket. I think moving forward, obviously, there's only one game left, but he was really, as far as Shanahan is concerned, really able to now start to expand the offensive installation with Jimmy. Now that Jimmy has had a better chance to really get a firm grip on the system and really start to bring everything that he has within his playbook, the capabilities of what this offense can produce.
We were on a very tight schedule after the game. You made your flight okay?
I did make my flight. I was actually on the same flight with John Lynch and his family. And, yeah, so they were hoping I would make the flight as well, since we had John on the post-game report. But yes, I was able to make it. Got home for Christmas Eve to see the kids and the family and prepare for a big Christmas day.
Yeah, so I think the post-game show ended around 5:30, and your flight was at 6:30?
Yes, it was, and I guess there was a little bit of delay, fortunately for me, because they were waiting on a flight crew. So I lucked out, but I was cutting it real tight.
So, okay, so you're on the same flight as John Lynch. I don't know how well you know him. I mean, how well do you know him? And just what do you think about the job that he has done in tandem with Kyle Shanahan here in year one?
Yeah, you know, I've obviously played against John throughout our careers, going back to him being at Stanford and me being at San Jose State. As a matter of fact, he picked off one of my passes. I think it was my first pass of the game one year we played them, and he took it back for a touchdown. Not the way I wanted to start that game. But that being said, he obviously had a great career, Hall of Fame career. And we live in the same neighborhood down here in San Diego. I know that he's probably going to make the move up to Northern Cal with his family once the school year ends. Many of his kids go to school with my kids at the same school. So I've been fortunate to be around him and have gotten to know him a little bit over the past year or so. But what they have done and what they will continue to do there with the organization, the relationship between him and Shanahan and how they work together, and just John having a player's background. I think that's so important, so key in developing this football team, the type of players that they want to have in that locker room, the type of guys that will be leaders for the team and will pull a locker room together. And I think you're starting to see that, even though this is a young football team, you see the key ingredients that are being established on the defensive side. Having a guy like Foster, that linebacker out of Alabama, was a key acquisition. I mean, such a great young player, so athletic, so much ability within himself. And he looks to be that type of leader that guys rally around. Now you have the quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, the great trade with New England, and how that has really translated into solidifying the future for this team at that position. Key acquisitions through the draft, free agency, and all those things are going to continue to be the reason why this team becomes more competitive on a yearly basis. And I really think that these guys, in what they've been able to put together from a staff, supporting Kyle Shanahan, and what John has brought to the table from a GM position and administrative position, has been just really positive for this first year. Obviously, hey, we knew that this was going to be a struggle in this first year. There was a huge turnover of personnel. The team had to get young before it got experienced, but they're growing up fast and they're finishing off this season on such a great note.
Yeah, think about that. Start the season 0-9, and here they are at 5-10 with one game left. What do you take, or what do you make of this upcoming game against the LA Rams, the NFC West champion LA Rams? And looking at the Rams and their roster, you know, they're certainly on the rise, while a couple of the other teams, I think, in the division are a little bit on the decline, although Seattle had a big win on Sunday against Dallas. But just to kind of keep this theme going, setting themselves up for the future, do you place any more credence on this final game of the season, if 49ers, if they can go down there to L.A. and come out of that with a victory to end the season on a five-game winning streak?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is a great opportunity for them to really prove their value that, hey, it wasn't just a fluke that they beat a playoff team this past week against Jacksonville. And even with the win over Tennessee, I think being able to compete within your division, being able to beat that team that is also a young team going through a lot of changes, but has risen to the top very fast under a new coach and new coaching staff. What they have done under McVay out there in LA has been awesome this year. They've turned a team that was very lackluster last year, underachieving in so many ways, had talent, but yet was underachieving. What he's done back in Goff and how that guy has performed this year and the weapons that they have put around him, both from an experience standpoint and a youthful standpoint, has been great. And then that defense, obviously having a leader like Phillips as the D coordinator, who's had great success in the league and a lot of talent on that defense side of the ball, has been proven to be very competitive for this team. The 49ers lost a shootout earlier in the season at home to the Rams. And this would be a great opportunity to go into LA. The Rams really not having anything to play for at this point, having won the division, but I don't think they have an opportunity to secure a first round bye. So they may rest some players. Who knows what their approach will be, but the 49ers can't worry about that. The 49ers need to go in there and just play the ball that they played the last 4 weeks under Jimmy, with the lead as him being the leader, and just go in and play competitive football and try to knock off another playoff team.
Yeah, well, things are going well for the 49ers. Things went well for you. You were able to get home on Christmas Eve, spend Christmas Eve and Christmas Day with your family. I'm glad that fell into place for you, Jeff, and really look forward to talking after this upcoming game, the 49ers season finale against the LA Rams.
Sounds great, Matt. May Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy New Year, and looking forward to talking soon.
Before we get to my interview with Bradley Pinion, I wanted to touch base with 49ers wide receivers coach and passing game specialist Mike LaFleur. He has been with Kyle Shanahan since the 2014 season with the Cleveland Browns, but he had no say in the matter. That's because his older brother, Matt LaFleur, made the commitment to Shanahan that Mike would accept a position on his staff. Mike and Matt spent the past couple seasons with the Atlanta Falcons before they went their separate ways in the NFC West. Mike came with Kyle Shanahan to the 49ers, while Matt LaFleur is the offensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Rams under Sean McVay. The brothers' teams will close out the regular season against each other on New Year's Eve in Los Angeles. Here's Mike LaFleur. Well, let's go back to 2014. You'd been coaching in the college ranks a little bit. Elmhurst, where you played.
Yep.
And then you coached 1 year, and then to Davidson.
Yep.
I think there's a local athlete here with the Warriors who I think went to Davidson.
Yes,
kind
there
of,
is.
Kind of a famous
yeah.
guy.
Yes, there is.
By the way, is there any landmarks around campus or in the gym of Steph Curry?
Well, no, there's not. It's kind of weird because Davidson's it's a really good academic school. Mm-hmm. You know, Steph was not a highly recruited guy, although Davidson's it's a good basketball school. Yeah. And he's a Charlotte kid, so he ended up going to Davidson because he had the grades to get in there. They do not, just because you're really talented, doesn't mean you're getting into Davidson. So he obviously was a very good student as well. The thing about him, he left school early to go to the NBA draft. Well, he didn't graduate. So until he graduates, they're not putting up the statue or retiring and all that kind of stuff. So now that was 4 years ago. I don't know if anything's changed in the last, you know, however many years since I've been back. But at that time, because I'm like, where's all the Steph stuff? They said, until he gets his diploma.
Really?
They're holding back. You know, they had pictures and stuff of him, but they held back a little bit.
Right.
That was a cool place. And
Yeah, it's outside of Charlotte.
Yeah.
And so you were a coach there at Davidson. And then how did you end up with Kyle with the Cleveland Browns?
So before I was at Davidson, my first job, I was at a D2 school in Indiana, St. Joseph's College. While I was there, my brother was with Kyle as his quarterback coach in Washington. Mm-hmm. And then before that, my brother.
Your brother, Matt LaFleur.
Yep, my brother, Matt. And he was with them in Houston before that, back when I was still in college at Elmhurst. That's where I met Kyle was when I was in college, just through my brother. And when I was coaching in college, I'd go out to OTAs and you know, before we started in August in college, I'd go out there and just sit in the meetings and kind of get to know them. When they all were done with Washington and Kyle went to Cleveland, my brother a few weeks before that went to Notre Dame. So he just basically called up my brother, didn't even call me, and said, hey, Will your brother want to come? I know you're not coming this time because you're at Notre Dame. Will your brother want to come? And I didn't even know any of this. Matt said, yeah, he'll be there. And so Matt calls me, tells me on a Sunday night, like, hey, you're going to Cleveland. I said, what do you mean I'm going to Cleveland? He said, you're going to Cleveland. I said, when? He goes, tomorrow morning. He goes, job's already yours, done. And so next thing I know, I headed up to Cleveland, and that's that. You know,
wow.
3 years later, here we are.
And obviously there's no – you were a coaching intern, right, with the Browns?
I was, yep, yep.
So there was never any thought that – do I keep this job here or do I go to the NFL? It was pretty much cut and dry what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been, even if it would have been up to me, because my brother made the decision,
right, yeah.
I would have made the same decision in a split second.
That's what older brothers are for, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, no, there it was, I wanted to obviously get to Washington. You know, obviously that would have been tough with my brother already there and everything like that. But they had all, like I said, getting to know all those guys, and Mike McDaniel was there in Washington and stuff like that. So it was, I think it was just them knowing me. It was easier for them to give the call saying, hey, this is a guy that we know will be a good fit here.
And interesting that, you know, your brother is in the NFC West. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, I don't know, the 49ers and Rams kind of seem to be on – you know, the Rams are having a really good season, but, you know, two young staffs, young head coaches. I mean, you guys could be rivals in the same division for a long time here.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty ironic, you know, just the opportunity going from Cleveland to Atlanta, and then he went from Notre Dame to Atlanta, so we had the 2 years there, which was unbelievable. And actually, we probably didn't know how cool it was until we left this past offseason. You know, like, wow, we just had 2 years together. Not only that, got to go to a Super Bowl together. Obviously didn't finish the way we wanted, but you know, it was cool for us. It was awesome for our family. It's just me and him. We don't have any sisters or other brothers, so my parents recently retired. They were down all the time in Atlanta. It was a really cool situation. All of a sudden now, you know, I head here, he heads over to LA with Sean, and now we're division rivals playing twice a week or twice a year. So it's an interesting deal. We don't talk much about it. It is what it is when we play that week, you know, and just like any other time we're competing in the summer when we're off, I'm trying to beat him, he's trying to beat me, and, you know, that's the way it's going to go.
All right, I'm joined now on the 49ers Insider Podcast by Bradley Pinion. And Bradley, this is the giving season, the time of year, and I thought you'd be the perfect guy to have on the 49ers Insider Podcast. Recently named the 49ers nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. That's really cool stuff.
It's awesome, and it's a big honor. I'm following the footsteps of people like Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith and some of the other nominees like J.J. Watt, what he's done this year. Just being on a list of people with those types of names, Drew Brees, all these people that have won it. It's a huge honor, not even just from the giving standpoint, but also just from the just being recognized for something off the field. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, of all the years you could be nominated, you know, perhaps the year when J.J. Watt raises $37 million for Hurricane Harvey relief. Probably won't win it.
But
just like you mentioned, to have your name mentioned in that sentence. And I mean, the 49ers are known for the 49er Foundation,
right,
and a very giving organization with players getting involved. To be, you know, put up on that mark is a great honor.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, in my opinion, J.J. Watt should win it this year. What he's done for the Houston area, it's something special to be able to raise that much money. That's like a once in a lifetime type thing. I hope one day I'm able to have an impact like that. So, my opinion, I think he should win it this year. I think, like I said, there's a number of people on that list that have just done amazing things. Greg Olson's been on it like three times. He's on it again this year. So people like that, I think they deserve to win it. Me being a younger player in the league, first year on the list, I don't expect to win it, but like I said, it's one of those things where it's just an honor to be listed along those names.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, we're going to talk more about that a little bit later. But,
okay.
But first, I want to talk to you about football.
Yeah.
I mean, you came into the league. You were the rare specialist who declared early for the draft in 2015. And selected in the fifth round. That's a lot of pressure right away, especially, you know, when – it kind of prompts the 49ers to get rid of a guy that had been here for so long.
Three-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, you know, Andy Lee, a phenomenal punter, very popular here. So what's it been like for you, you know, stepping in and trying to fill the, you know, the cleat of Andy Lee.
It's big shoes to fill. Andy's a great guy. I personally know him. Great dude, great punter. We're two different styles of punting. He likes to drive the ball and it goes a really long ways, but sometimes doesn't have the best hang time. Where I'm more of a ratio guy, where I like my hang times and my distances to kind of match up. I think that's kind of showed this year the most. Our punt team was second in the NFL against yards allowed, and just second in the NFL in general. And I think that's kind of where we're looking to go to with Hightower. And with myself, is we'd rather have that ball that goes in the air and hangs there. The person who's got the fair catcher, they're going to get hit right away. That's kind of the different styles of punting. That's just the way I've been raised and the way I grew up punting. And I feel like I've finally kind of gotten to that this year more so than just trying to fill those shoes that Andy had. Because, I mean, everybody knows Andy will hit those 60, 70-yard bombs. And the person might return it 20 yards. And so it's a great net, but my style of punting is very different from that.
Yeah, are you familiar with Bruce DeHaven?
Yeah, 100%.
The late special teams coach,
one of the best
with the Bills, with the 49ers, and
Panthers.
With the Panthers, and he was here for a few years and got to know him very well. And one of the first things he told me, and he would always say this. I'd write something about someone's gross punting average, and he would say, "Matt, it's not the gross punting average, it's the net.
It's the net."
And so 100%. Now, ever since he told me that, now I don't even look at gross punting average. It's all about the net.
It's all about the net.
Yeah. You tell me about your approach. I mean, you want to pin a guy to the sideline more than likely and let your guys go down and make the tackle.
Yeah. So my approach is much like a lot of other punters. You want to put it high into the sideline. We say for every 10 yards, you want a second of hang time. So if you hit a 50-yard ball, you want a 5-0 hang time. If you hit a 45-yard ball, you want a 4-5 hang time or better. That's kind of the way I punt the ball. My punts may not go the 70 yards or 60 yards, but I'm going to hit that 45 to 50 range, 40 to 50 range with a good hang time to make them fair catch it. And that's kind of the philosophy that I got instilled in me at a very young age. For one, it helps your coverage team, so I feel like I'm helping the team. For two, it helps your net and your gross and your net be very similar, which I think speaks testaments a lot to the coverage team as well. We have one of the best coverage teams.
I mean, the number one thing is, where did your offense give up the ball and where does the other team take over?
Take the ball.
And the higher that number is, that's the only thing that matters.
Correct.
And I mean, Andy Lee is phenomenal, and he did a great job here. But I bet you didn't know that right now where your net is, it took Andy Lee 8 years to get to that point.
Wow!
And what's also interesting, just kind of looking up, you're like you're in the middle of the pack punters with net, but this whole I think it's only a real recent thing where the net averages in the NFL are over 40. I mean, back in the day, Bruce DeHaven used to tell me, if it's 38 net, we're happy.
Yeah.
Now,
you got to be above 40.
You got to be above 40. It's interesting.
It's crazy how the game has evolved, really. The punters, I think, have just gotten better. They've gotten better at putting it on the sideline. So if you don't have a good hang time and you pin it on the sideline, it's almost the exact same thing as having a good hang time because the guy can't return it. And, I mean, I think it's just the evolving of punters being able to do more punts as well. So now we have punters facing one direction but hitting the ball the other direction. Or you have the we call them rugby kicks, where the ball goes up in the air, hits, and bounces backwards for the inside the 20 kick. So you're starting to maximize the yardage. So you hit that rugby kick inside the 5-yard line and it bounces backwards. Whereas before, people were trying to put the ball out of bounds. And kind of if you leave things in the ref's hands, you never know how it's going to go. So if I hit the ball 5 yards out of bounds, they could put it 8 yards up the field. And you never know. So I think the evolving of punters, being able to hit different kicks and mastering the technique, has really what's seen the boost in net yardage.
And two of the things that you do well is you put the ball inside the 20 and you don't kick it into the end zone.
Yeah, that's all I did at Clemson. When I was at Clemson, we had a very good team. And it seems like we would either score a touchdown or stall out at midfield. So I literally, basically all my punts at Clemson were those plus 50 punts, those rugby punts. And so I had to master that to help our defense. And we had one of the best defenses in the college football when I was there. I think like half the defense is in the NFL now. And being able just to make a team drive 75 or 80 yards on you every single on the number one defense in the country, that's not going to happen. And that's what something I took pride in coming out of college, and something I still take pride in. I feel like being able to make the team drive 70, 80 yards is something that truly helps.
Well, we need to work with you on your tackling, because one of the more interesting plays of the year, and you probably don't want me bringing this up, but Tarik Cohen.
Oh, he's
that was
awesome
a play where it could have been a negative 15-yard return, and it turned into a plus 61. You kind of had – he had a pretty good convoy set up there, but could you have made that tackle? Could you
have? I don't know. I mean, I would have – looking back on it, you think there's a bunch of things you can do different. That's with every game, with every punt. Making that tackle, he's like a video game returner. Yeah. Like, he's like a joystick.
Yeah, that was crazy to watch that unfold, because you were thinking, what the heck is he
I
doing?
Thought we had him. And then next thing I know, he's coming down the sideline at me, and I'm like, oh, my Lord, what do I do here? And it's a convoy of like four people in front of him. And to be honest with you, that's the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works. It's one play, one missed tackle, one punt that doesn't have the best hang time, and the ball's coming back to the house. And honestly, I think I was like top five in the league before that punt, that return, and then I dropped like 15 after that one return. And that's how the NFL works. And that's the beauty of it, honestly. It's what keeps us striving every day to go out there and get better, hit a different kick the next time, or do something along those lines.
Well, the 49ers are a better team, and actually they're a better team not because you're not punting as often, but certainly that's a byproduct
factor
of it. With Jimmy Garoppolo converting more third downs, putting together drives. So what's that been like to certainly be a spectator more than you've been during
these games? It's kind of cool, though, because, I mean, I do kickoffs. I do kickoffs, too, and it's one of those situations where I'm still getting the same number of kicks a game, but they're kickoffs instead of punts, which is just awesome because we're scoring points. To have a field goal kicker like Robbie that's automatic on all the kicks, to be able to go out there and hold for Robbie and then go hit a kickoff and see Jimmy take the ball and just drive down the field with it. It's really cool to see. It's easy because I know, like, we have a long third down. It's one of those situations where I'm like, oh, we're going to get it. And then if we do have to punt, I'm out there, I'm like, oh, this is all right. Like, I'm going to hit a good punt now. Like, I'm punting. I think I punted once last game, and maybe like two times the game before that.
Yeah.
So it's really easy, and it actually reminds me a lot when I was at Clemson. It's the same way, because we would be driving the field, and then we'd have one mishap or something, and I'd have to punt. And I mean, it was crazy for me, because when I the first 2 years in the NFL, I had like almost 200 punts total in 2 years, which is crazy. And I didn't even like break 100 the whole time I was at Clemson. Mm-hmm. So it got adjusting. This is taking me back to those days when I was at Clemson.
The your other responsibility is holding.
Yeah.
It looks like you guys are in a pretty good groove, from Kyle Nelson, the long snapper, to you. Of course, Robbie gets the headlines in the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week honors. But tell me a little bit about that. And I've always kind of been fascinated with just the mechanics of the long snap and how a good long snapper can dictate how you catch the ball and where the seams are.
It's really impressive. Kyle's one of the best in the league, 100% hands down. Just his body of work he's put together makes him one of the best. And to be able, I can tell him, like, hey, the laces were facing me when I caught that one, and the next one, the laces will be perfect.
And it's just an adjustment he makes to sure it has the same number of revolutions all the way back, so that when you catch it, the laces are where they need to be.
Right.
That's crazy.
And sometimes it's me. So Kyle tries to throw the same ball every single time, but I may catch it in a different spot, maybe a little farther back or a little farther forward. And he'll be like, I'll tell him, hey, the laces were this. I was like, I think I caught that one a little forward, though. Snap another one, and I'll catch it more in my sweet spot, what we call it, and the laces will be perfect. So just a matter of if my hand's a little farther out or a little farther back, or if the ball's a little inside or outside, it affects all of it. But literally, like, we call it a quarter turn. If the ball's anywhere where I just have to turn the ball a quarter of a turn, we're money. And that's what every single snap is a quarter turn. And it's awesome. It allows Robbie to swing fluidly, not have to worry about me and Kyle. Kyle is what makes the group go. Without Kyle, I don't get the ball. And without Kyle, Robbie doesn't kick the ball. So Kyle is what makes the group go.
Phil Dawson was always kind of quirky. I always thought that, you know, some guys, when they play the sport, they're destined for the broadcast booth.
Yeah.
I always thought he was destined for the meteorologist. You know, he's going to be a weatherman.
Without a doubt.
He knows weather like no one I've ever met. What about Robbie Gould? Does he have any quirks like that?
Yeah, I think all punters and kickers look at the weather. Just kind of because we're the ones that's going to affect the most. Because I got to know, especially for field goal kicking, you got to know where you got to play the ball a little more right, a little left, whether it's going to rain, whether just it affects the way the ball flies. And when you've been in the league as long as Robbie has, you know a little bit about the weather, and you've been played at most stadiums, so you know how a ball is going to fly in most stadiums. Phil was. I hate to say it, a little over the top with it. He would tell me what the weather was like 2 weeks before we even got to it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of cool to see because the weather always changed like 5 times by then. So by game day, I'm like, which one is it again? but it's cool to see how Robbie does it. He looks at it maybe the week of the game, early in the week, kind of gets a feel for it. So you can actually kind of try to kick in that type of wind in practice. And then as a little later in the week, it might change and he'll look at it again. And it's really cool to see how he goes about it in a very professional manner of like, all right, the wind's going to be northwest and you know which way the stadium's running. Like, all right, so the ball's going to be doing this that day. And we'll talk through it and you can have different lanes that help that. And it's really cool to see.
Do you go out to the field very often?
We
like
did
during the week?
We did during the beginning of the year.
There he is right there. Yeah. There's Robbie Gold.
Robbie Gold.
Oh, Bradley Pinion. Podcast. Bradley Pinion. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem.
He has to drop 5 names. If he doesn't, let me.
I've already dropped yours and Kyle's 5 times.
We didn't plan that.
No, not
a walkthrough.
Walkthrough just happens. No, we went out there very beginning of the year a lot. We'd go out there once a week and on Thursdays, and we'd kick in there just so Robbie had never played in the stadium before. I think he only had played in Candlestick, so he had to figure out what the winds were going to do. And in my opinion, this might be the hardest stadium to kick in the entire NFL. Just the way our open ends are and the way the wind comes.
Have you
comes
kicked
off
in Giants Stadium yet?
Yeah, I kicked in the Giants
and
Stadium.
And this is even worse than that?
Yeah. I mean, I've never kicked in Green Bay. I've heard that's really hard. Chicago, I actually love playing in Chicago. Some people hate it. I love playing in Chicago. Ours, and I mean, you get Buffalo. Buffalo can gust like 40 mile per hour winds. But I think one of the hardest places to kick, and this kind of proves more of how good Robbie is with what he's done this year.
Yeah, this is going to air on Tuesday,
okay.
So we will already have celebrated Christmas.
Another win.
I understand. Another win. Okay. Well, we'll see. I might have to edit that part out. But your favorite Christmas present? I read this. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, I got a football.
How old were you?
6th grade.
Okay.
I think. Got a football for Christmas. I've always played soccer. And my grandpa used to punt. He was a punter as well. So my dad gave me a football, or my mom got me a football for Christmas. So I got the football and we went out to our local field. And my dad thought I was just going to want to throw it. And I was like, no, I want to kick it. I want to kick it like grandpa did. So he actually put the ball down on his foot. And I kicked a 35-yard field goal, first time I'd ever kicked a football in my entire life. Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, hang on, do that again. So he sits down, and I knocked it through again. So I started out kicking field goals. My dad was like, well, we're going to get you some, like, professional help. Like, this could be something. Mm-hmm. So I started out kicking field goals, and then turned out, like, I played goalie in soccer, so I could punt a soccer ball a long ways. So I'm going to punt this thing. So I started punting it. And that's just kind of how it started. All that football, that one Christmas, changed my life, really.
Yeah. That's great. So now you do a lot more giving than receiving with all the stuff you're doing. In 3 years with the 49ers, you've attended 30 events, 49ers-related events, mm-hmm. benefiting 40 different charities. And these during the season, that this all takes place on your day off.
Right.
So just kind of tell me how you got into being so charitable with your time.
My family's always been very blessed and very fortunate. And from a young age, my dad instilled in me helping those that may be a little less fortunate.
And you grew up where?
Concord, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So I always did stuff with the local Boys and Girls Club or the local Y or just local foundations. And it's transferred all the way through Clemson to now. At Clemson, there's a great setup to where you have similar to this, where you can go to community events very often. And I think that's really where my passion grew, was at Clemson. And then once I got in the NFL and actually had a bigger platform, it was something that I take pride in now. To be able to see those kids, the smile on those kids' faces is something that I would cherish for the rest of my life. Playing Santa or...
Yeah, you were Santa
yeah,
at the...
the Convoy of Hope event. So just...
Is that the first time you've done that?
No, that's like my third time playing Santa. It's okay. One of my favorite things. The kids freak out. There's like playing with the beer. Their eyes light up. It's the coolest.
Let's hear your Santa voice.
Oh, I don't know. I gotta be in the mood okay. for that one. Okay, no, I don't know about that. But no, it's awesome. Just being able to reach so many different people.
And tell me, what's Convoy of Hope? What is it?
Convoy of Hope is their main thing is disaster relief. So with all the hurricanes and the wildfires that's going on this year, they've had a huge year. Mm-hmm. They go in right before it happens, during it, and after. Provide relief and supplies. They also have different programs set about women empowerment. They have a Feed One program, which is where you can donate $10 a month and you feed a child for a month for the $10. They're also who I'm with Walter Payton Man of the Year comes some giving of money from the NFL, and they're the charity that I picked for that just because I think the work that they do is impeccable. They're a Christ-based... They're a Christ-based foundation that really just, I feel like that sets them, puts them a step higher for me. Right.
And you even, for the my cause, my cleats.
Yeah.
Or is it my cleats, my cause?
My cause, my cleats.
My cause, my cleats.
Yeah.
That you had, your cleats were Convoy of Hope.
Yeah, they were Convoy of Hope. They had Feed One on one shoe, and they actually had like the Convoy of Hope, and like they had the American flag, which I see as a symbol of hope for the United States. On one shoe, and it's truly special. Those cleats actually went for $5,000 for an auction.
That's great. Congratulations.
That will go back to Convoy of Hope.
That's awesome. And you know, you've done so many events, met so many people. Is there anyone who's left a lasting impression on you that you've been able to touch and who's touched you during these charity events that you've had?
I say one of the main people that kind of got this whole ball rolling with the community relations stuff was actually my grandmother. She had one of the most giving hearts that I've ever seen in my entire life. Fortunately, she's passed away now and all that. And people say I got her heart. And then it also transfers over into my fiance. I met my fiance 5-6 years ago now. And, her mom passed away 2 years ago. And so seeing that and seeing her mom ran a nonprofit for like her whole entire career and seeing her mom, which was by far one of the best people on the entire planet, really seeing how it affected other people, really it affected me more so than anything. So Kaylee's mom, Regina, and my grandmother are two huge people in my life that really showed the way for me as a giving attitude, as a giving heart. Here locally, that something that's really affected me is our community relations team. We have one of the like you said earlier, the best in the NFL. They won an award, like I think the past 2 years for being the best. And just the opportunities they give us, I wouldn't be nominated for this award or anything without them.
Yeah, I know when John Lynch took over as general manager, one of the things he said was that if the 49ers are only winning football games and not affecting positive change in the community, this organization hasn't done enough.
Right.
And I think you and the work you've done certainly exemplifies that.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to the Yorks, too. They do a lot with the 49er Foundation, with their own foundation. They do a ton. And just kind of having your leader have that same attitude, it helps. It helps a lot knowing that they support you in what you're doing. It's really cool.
Well, Bradley, congratulations.
Thank you.
The 49ers nominee for the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. All the great work you've done.
Yeah.
Continued success. And thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
Thank you very much.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.